Welcome to another Journey to the Blue Sky. My name is Aaron.
My name is Patricia.
And would you believe it, we're finally at the last official Blue Sky movie.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone through a pretty interesting journey. Some have been good, some have been bad, some have been in the middle. But let's see how Blue Sky's swan song, or should I say pigeon song, ends up being.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this a master spy movie or is it for the birds?
All right, let's talk about this.
Okay, so we're talking about Spies in Disguise. It is a 2019 computer animated spy comedy film which was produced by Blue Sky Studios before it was bought out by Disney. And this basically was to be allowed for Blue Sky basically to produce somewhat technically under the Disney banner. However, unfortunately, it wasn't enough to save the studio because after Spies in Disguise came out, Blue Sky Studios was no more.
Considering that the last several movies in a row were very underperforming, I guess maybe that was like one of the nails in the coffin on why Disney decided to shut it down. I mean, there's also been some other rumors saying that Blue Sky Studios was going through major debt, but yeah, it hasn't been 100% confirmed on why it has been. But for Spies in Disguise, this is the low point, unfortunately, because it is Blue Sky Studios' lowest grossing film. We talked about that, you know, in Epic and in Ferdinand, in which like it doubled the budget. But in this one, it barely made back its budget. It was $100 million, and it only brought in $171 million. It was that underperforming.
Yeah. So why did it perform that poorly? Well, let's get into it. Lance Sterling, played by Will Smith, is a cocky secret agent, a part of HTUV, that's the Honor, Trust, Unity, and Valor, and is sent to recover an attack drone from a Japanese arm dealer. As soon as the buyer, cybernetically enhanced terrorist Killian, arrives, Sterling breaks in against the orders of HTUV director Joy Jenkins, defeating Kimura and his gang, and manages to escape with the briefcase containing the drone. Sterling returns to the HTUV headquarters to confront Walter Beckett, a socially inept MIT graduate and outcast young scientist, for equipping him with non-lethal weapons for his suit. Walter tries to convince Sterling that there is a more peaceful way to save the world, but Sterling fires back at him, saying that he can explain his latest invention, biodynamic concealment. Sterling discovers the briefcase to be empty and is confronted by Marcy, an internal affairs agent, who reveals footage of Sterling, actually Killian in a holographic disguise, leaving with the drone, labeling him as a traitor. Sterling escapes with the HTUV and decides to track down Walter to help him disappear. Meanwhile, Killian breaks into the HTUV covert weapons facility. While searching for Walter's home for an invention, Sterling ingests a concoction and transforms into a pigeon by undergoing quote-unquote chromothoresis before Walter and Sterling can decide what to do next. Marcy and the HTUV agents chase the duo through the city, but the duo escape in Sterling's spy car. The two track down Kimura and the results of the play Del Carmen in Mexico. There they learn that Killian's whereabouts in Venice, Italy, before Marcy and the HTUV can capture them once again. So that's basically the setup of our movie. And but to be honest with you, like, you know, you would say on paper that Spies in Disguise and the way that we have the setup is actually pretty good. You've got Lance Sterling, who basically is a very cocky, you know, agent who basically plays by his own rules and is not a team player. And then you have Walter, who, you know, just wants to basically do good in the world and wants to work with people and wants to do things non-lethally. And so these are basically two sides, completely opposite sides of the same coin, effectively. But, you know, they just kind of gel together, and because one refuses to do the other, and the other one is just constantly left, you know, convincing, holding the bag. So, I mean, on paper, all of this should work. Unfortunately, it doesn't.
Yeah, and there's one major reason as to why. throughout the course of the movie, and you've seen this in the trailers, but he turns into a pigeon and it transforms into what would be a, you know, competent spy movie for kids, like Mission Impossible or any of the James Bond films. But then when you have a situation in which, you know, he turns into a pigeon, it then becomes like slapstick kiddie fare, which just kind of weighs the whole thing down.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's just that. I think it's just the fact that, I mean, this is going to be a family movie, obviously. It's Blue Sky. I mean, so obviously they can't take too many risks in this. But, I mean, there was one point where, you know, you saw Yakuza, you know, where members, like, you know, getting drunk in, like, you know, in, like, you know, in an office, which is kind of like, you know, is a bit, you know, questionable in regards to a kid's movie, but I digress. But, I mean, it has all the aesthetics of, like, a spy movie. But, unfortunately, that's basically what it is. It's sort of like a movie that's kind of cosplaying as a spy movie. When you really think about it, because like it has all like all the elements, it has like everything, you know, to put it together in that. But I mean, the problem is that it feels very generic and it doesn't feel very inspired. If anything, like again, like Epic, like it feels like it's more borrowing from like other movies and it's not really finding an identity of its own.
Yeah, and also I would argue that Walter is essentially Flint Lockwood from Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. It literally just starts off with his mom is the only person who completely understands his inventions because everyone around him thinks that he's a weirdo. And then she dies. And then he is basically left with his own inventions and he's just talking a whole bunch of scientific jargon and everybody else thinks of him as weird until eventually he saves the day with his unorthodox inventions. That's exactly what happens. Hey, Patricia,
do you think that was Blue Sky's last ditch attempt to like justify his existence within the House of Mouse? He's like, hey, look, you know, the mom dies. They all die in your movies, right?
Yeah, except that you know, the moms haven't died in a Disney movie in quite a while. I mean, usually it would be like, okay, the moms would die and then the dads would die and then maybe a few other characters would die or maybe they won't die at all. So yeah, I mean, you're not gonna make things any better by taking a whole bunch of cliches from another company that hasn't done it in years.
No, you know, you get James and the Giant Pizza, basically. That we'll do one better. We'll have them both eaten by a giant rhinoceros.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, I mean, like I said, it just feels very derivative from Mission Impossible, from any of the James Bond films, or like I said, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, where you have like the weird science-y kid. And then, of course, we have Will Smith as Lance Sterling. And I mean, here's the thing. It's better than Shark Tale. I will tell you that. It is better than Shark Tale. But he plays the exact same character. A cocky, overconfident guy who thinks that he can be able to do things by himself and constantly makes mistakes.
So effectively, Will Smith plays Will Smith.
Yes.
Yeah, that's and also on top of that, he raps as well, by the way.
Of course he does. I mean... What you might as well have you know, Will Smith rap as well. I mean, if you have Will Smith as your main protagonist, you might as well take advantage of him and do the soundtrack.
Yeah, it just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of, it kind of feels a bit, the fact that you get that with the package. I mean, the fact that, you know, you have to have like this in like in a family Will Smith, you know, orientated movie, just like, you know, it kind of feels like Shaq in a way. It's like, you know, like when he has to be like in a movie, you remember when he had to be in a movie and he had to rap and he had to like be cool and things like that. And all that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, come on, guys. Like, you know, it's just, it's a, you know, I was hoping that, you know, Will Smith was going to surprise me in some way, but unfortunately, he doesn't. He's just Will Smith. Like, he's just, there's nothing unique about Lance Sterling.
Yeah, I mean, it feels very similar to his character in Independence Day. It feels very similar to his character in Men in Black. Yeah, there's nothing really different about him other than just his name and that he's a secret agent.
Didn't it feel very Men in Black at some point when you're going for like the headquarters and stuff? Like,
yeah,
you know, like,
it did feel like Men in Black. I was just expecting, hey, you know, where are all the other agents and where's the dog and where are the aliens? And
I was going to say, like in this spy agency, it's very casually dressed. Isn't it?
I mean,
like,
it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's that cliche in which, you know, you just have like, you know, them just having a normal job. And at the same time, it's supposed to be like something really serious that they're in a secret agency. It's very similar to like Monsters, Inc., in which like, you know, they're just casually walking around and talking to one another, drinking coffee, and they're out scaring a whole bunch of kids for energy. Or even with, you know, there's a lot of examples. I mean, Black Butler is another example in which, like...
But Monsters, Inc., I mean, I would argue, I mean, like, it's because, you know, it's not really seen to have, like, monsters kind of, like, interacting like humans at a normal job. So that's kind of the charm of Monsters, Inc. But, you know, Spies in Disguise, you know, in this whole secret agency, I mean, like, to portray it as, like, any other job is, like, it kind of, like, removes the charm of, like, you know, the idea of, like, being part of, like, HTUV. I mean, like, I mean, I've not seen any of the latest Bond movies. I'll be totally honest with everybody about that. But, I mean, some of the Bond movies that I've seen, I mean, like, they're not like that. I mean, at least the ones that I've watched anyway. So, I mean, like, I just think that, you know, Spies in Disguise, I mean, it's sort of, it feels so weird because I feel like it is trying to be, you know, something, but it just ends up kind of like being, oh, well, there's so many reminders, like, other movies that it kind of feels like there's no unique identity to this. And also, it's, it kind of feels like it plays pretty safe in some areas when it could have taken risks.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's unfortunately we've had this conversation before where they essentially borrow a lot from other sources and they try to do it their own way. But unfortunately, they just play it the same way as we've seen it in other things. I mean, the same thing happened with Epic, where it's like a generic fantasy tale where we've seen this in Ferngully, we've seen this in Avatar. Basically, a lot of the environmentally messaged 90s films that we grew up with. Even with like Ferdinand, and okay, we have this bull who is essentially trying to be really, really nice. I mean, there's a lot of movies that try to take advantage of, oh, you know, he's supposed to be said as one thing, but, you know, because of the way he's acting, he's completely different. Same thing happened with Shrek. Same thing happened with Zootopia. Even recently with Nimona, we've seen this message before and it was played off way better. I mean, yeah, here with Spies in Disguise, you think, okay, a spy movie. Oh, this will be really interesting to see Blue Sky Studios do a genre of films that they haven't done before. But it's very similar to a lot of spy movies that we've seen. And even if you've never seen a spy movie, you know of the tropes and the cliches.
Yeah. So, the one thing I'll say about the characters is that, I mean, they're all stock, effectively. Like, you know, you've got Will Smith basically being Will Smith. You've got, like, you know, the geeky Walter, who we've basically seen this kind of character before, like you say, in Cloudy the Chance of Meatballs. And also, I'm pretty sure we've seen this character in various other movies as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, especially with, like, even recently with, like, Mission Impossible, you have to have, like, the guy who's in the computer and he's telling the secret agent, okay, this person is in this location, you need to sneak around and they won't be able to catch you. I mean, you know, like we said before in the Mission Impossible films, you know, guess who is the person who plays as that character currently? Simon Pegg.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the one thing I will say is that, you know, Tom Holland tries to play this character very well, I would say. I mean, at least he tries to give it a go. You know, like, it's not like, you know, he's got, like, an MO or anything like that. Like, you know, he does, like, some, like, generic things. Like, you know, Tom Holland does recognize the character that's in front of him. So he does play the character very well. It's just unfortunate that he's not very good much to work with.
Yeah, I mean, he just has like a vague backstory about that. His mom was a police officer. She was killed in battle after rescuing a lot of people. And he decides that he's going to invent gadgets that doesn't hurt anybody so that they can be able to rescue people and prevent them from harm. And, you know, that's a really interesting take on what we've seen before in a lot of superhero TV shows and movies and comic books. Batman, for example, where he doesn't kill, but he realizes that even when he takes the bad guys over to Arkham Asylum, they're going to be released eventually, and then they're going to be killing people. Is Batman basically doing more harm than good by locking them up as opposed to killing them? Superman is an example in which, like, he has the power to do anything, but he has to hold himself back because he was raised in a good environment over in Smallville with Ma and Pa Kent, where he was taught about being a good person. In his regular super abilities, he can be able to crush anybody with, you know, not even breaking a sweat. But he is the representation of being the good Boy Scout. If you want to see an example of him going in an extreme measure, then read off the Red Sun comic books in which, you know, instead of him landing in Smallville, he lands in, you know, Soviet Russia around the Cold War, where he is raised in that, and then he uses his power as a dictatorship. Or, you know, another example, you know, play the Injustice video games. And even a few years earlier, there was an interesting movie called Hacksaw Ridge, where it's based off of the true story of Desmond Doss, who he signs up for World War II, but he doesn't want to kill anybody because he wants to be able to follow in the Ten Commandments of thou shall not kill. And so he becomes a medic, and everybody makes fun of him, saying that he's just the soft boy who shouldn't even be around. But he ends up saving 75 lives during one of the most massive battles during World War II in Japan. So yeah, this stuff has been done before, and it can be done really well if you execute it properly. But here, it's just like, I can see where they're trying to go with this. They were so close into having like this really interesting take on, you know, killing people. It doesn't solve anything, you know, for the most part. If you want to be able to try to write around the fact that you have the main villain of the story, Killian, who wants to take revenge on Sterling for basically killing off all of the members of his team in Kyrgyzstan and almost killing him, where he has to have like a face that can be able to turn into a whole bunch of different faces, and he has a claw for his hand, insert Inspector Gadget joke here. But I would say that he's probably the best villain that we've seen in Blue Sky because of his menacing. But if you were to take away from just comparing it to other villains in other animated movies, he's pretty
generic. Yeah, there's just nothing interesting there. The one thing I will say also is that the music in this movie is also, once again, it's your generic spy, you know, movie music. But the one thing I would have thought they at least they would have got right, in my opinion, would be, you know, the intro music that usually comes in every Bond movie describing like what's going on and like who the villain is and things like that. But it's just generic, you know, let's still get jiggy in the club kind of thing. Like, there's no description about like what the movie's about. And even then, it just seems like it's so, you know, non-descriptive, and like it just doesn't feel like it's it could go over anything apparently, you know, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah,
But
you shouldn't do
yeah.
that. I mean, throughout the past 50 years since James Bond movies have been around, they've always had a theme song sung by a very popular singer at the time, where they're able to portray what the movie is going to be about by the song so that you can get really invested on to what you're about to watch. I mean, everybody from Tina Turner, from Madonna, from Duran Duran, from anybody can be able to showcase about like, okay, this is what is going to open up the movie and this is what we're going to be getting ourselves into. But here it's like, okay, we're going to have all of the visuals of a spy movie. That looks great. But then you have like this party music playing in the background and you're like, okay, I mean, this doesn't exactly sound like I'm going to be watching a spy movie. It sounds like I'm going to be watching like a movie that has a lot of songs in it, kind of like similar to Rio, where at least in that made sense.
Yeah, so again, like they play, they try and do a lot of things that you would see in a spy movie, but they just don't do them right, you know. Like, or if they do, like you've probably seen them before. In fact, I'm pretty sure even out of spy movies, they even borrowed from like other, you know, 3D. They even borrowed from like Pixar at one point because the part where, you know, where they thought that Walter got blown up in the submarine, and you know, and they made you know, Lance Sterling watch as it happened. Like, you know, they borrowed that from The Incredibles.
They did,
You know, like,
yeah.
yeah, exactly. So, like, unfortunately, you know, there's so much unoriginality in this movie that every time you see a scene, or every time, I mean, the only good scene, I guess, I would say, is that when you know, when they're on the boat, and you know, Lance Sterling is obviously the pigeon, and Walter are basically having that talk about, you know, what's the best way of going about it. And you can, I mean, to be fair, like I actually like that conversation because, you know, Lance Sterling has basically seen how awful things human beings can be, and he's had to do all that he can to stop them and everything. And so, I mean, he has that conversation, and then you know, Walter says, oh, you don't realize how, you know, that I've also seen the awful side of this as well, you know, because of my mother dying. But I mean, he doesn't mention that. But I mean, also on top of that, Lance Sterling only finds that out when he's obviously a pigeon, and you know, Macy and Marcy and Walter are having that conversation, and he only realizes that after the fact. So I mean, that was a really good conversation in the movie, but unfortunately, like, you know, one scene in a movie unfortunately doesn't really save, you know, the other, you know, 100, sorry, 98 minutes that's probably, like, you know, left in the movie to kind of, like, you know, play with. effectively. And so unfortunately there's like only like a 4 minute segment I could probably say is like, you know, the best part of the film. And it should be like you know one of the best segments in the movie, but unfortunately it's the only segment.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that also the scene in which when Killian tells Walter, I mean, tells Lance about the reason why he's doing this in the first place is because he wants to be able to get revenge on Walter and the organization that he works for, because he killed off all of his men and then left him disfigured when he's supposed to be the hero. He's supposed to be saving everybody. But yeah, you would think that that would be like an interesting scene because we find out the motivation of the bad guy. Wow. We actually find out what the motivation of the bad guy is. I mean, I'm sorry that is, you know, this is something that we're complaining about, but no, I mean, like, this is something that I'm just surprised that we're actually seeing, because in a lot of these Blue Sky films, motivation is something that we haven't seen in these films. Like, what was the motivation behind, you know, when Ratchet is trying to shut down the entire company, other than the fact that his mother's telling him to? You know, what was the reason behind, you know, the loggers trying to, like, shut down the plans of Julia and Tullio, other than they're tree huggers and he wants to be able to cut trees? Why is he cutting trees? Because he's evil. It's like, yeah, if we finally have a motivation of a bad guy in a Blue Sky movie, this is something we should be like happy with. It's like, finally we have motivation. But the motivation, you know, again, is just like, oh, you killed my men, you disfigured me, I want to get revenge. This should have been something that we would have been looking forward to seeing, and maybe giving getting a deeper backstory on, like maybe a flashback or something. But
you know,
no,
they should have done a Trevelyan situation where like Killian should have been, you know, like a former spy, and he ended up in a situation where, you know, they abandoned him because they, you know, because, or even Lance Sterling, you know, abandoned him because, like, you know, he thought he'd be all right on his own, and he always, you know, worked solo and stuff, and he ends up being disfigured because of something that went wrong. And, you know, I thought maybe they were probably, you know, do that route with him. I really thought it was going to be like, you know, oh, hey, I'm, you know, a former spy back from the dead or something like that, and he wants to get revenge on the agency.
Or it could have been like in Buzz Lightyear, A Star Command, in which, like, you have this former partner of Buzz, and, you know, he gets killed off, and then he's, like, saying, I work alone, and then it turns out that he was behind the whole thing. And it was, you know, maybe, like, an interesting take about, like, you know, you can't always do things by yourself, you left me behind, and, or, hey, you know, it's not always about you, Lance, we're supposed to be a team, and unfortunately, you got the, you know, you got the praise, and you got the credit, and then I was just left in the dust, and, you know, this is my revenge of showing you that it's not always about you. I mean, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like a revenge motive would have been way better for this villain than, you know, like, oh, hey, you know, you beat me up, so I'm going to beat you up even harder.
Yeah,
know?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I thought that was weak.
Yeah, what did you think of the main gimmick of this movie about him turning into a pigeon? In my opinion, I think it was worthless. Like, other than just like, oh, he's a pigeon and we're going to put this in the promotions to make the kids laugh. It's like, why couldn't you just do a regular spy movie and make that like the main core of the story?
I think the problem with it is that I think you need to put... I can see the motivation behind it, because you need to put Lance Sterling in a situation where he can't, you know, act normally. Effectively, so like you know, mind you, like the one thing I would have thought is that maybe make Lance Sterling like really reliant on his gadgets, maybe, and so like, you know, he's always using gadgets and he's always using like, you know, explosions and like grenades and stuff. Like, mind you, the one thing I'll say about this just on as a side note to this is that I think Lance Sterling is a pretty terrible spy when you really think about it. Like, you know, he goes in like Rambo and like wants to kill everybody.
Yeah, Rambo. Like, yeah. Rambo is an ex-soldier. Ex-soldiers and spies are not the same thing.
Exactly. Like, why? If you're gonna make Lance Sterling a spy, why play him like Rambo? I'm sorry. Like, you know, it's just so weird. Like, I mean, so that there's that part I really took issue with. Like, Lance Sterling is a pretty terrible spy when you really think about it, because, you know, he goes in and basically just says, "Oh, hey, I'm here, everybody," and then starts blowing everybody away. And doesn't really do like any really proper sneaking around when you really think about it.
It reminds me a lot of like poorly executed ninja games, in which like traditionally a ninja is supposed to be sneaking around, spying on people and assassinating them without being caught. But a lot of poorly executed ninja games has them going around in public and killing people by the dozens and then just walking away like nothing ever happened.
It's just, yeah, I just think it's poorly. Mind you, that was the side point that I was getting on. The other point I would say about the whole pigeon gimmick is that, I mean, they needed to put Lance Sterling in a situation where, you know, he wasn't, you know, able to do what he normally does. And so the whole idea of him being a pigeon is that obviously he needs to, you know, use the ability to like fly and the ability to like, you know, blend in and the ability to basically like, you know, be effectively a better spy. Like, you know, Walter says. And so that's the idea of turning him into a pigeon. And so, I mean, it's just, it's, I know it sounds like something that you probably see out of South Park, really. Like, you remember that Ninjas South Park episode?
Yeah.
That was, yeah. So basically, it kind of reminds me of it, like, you know, when I'm going to turn Carl into a chicken. Like,
yeah, know, just, here's the thing. I understand.
It just seems juvenile, I will admit.
I understand the concept of using a pigeon because pigeons have been used in battle, like carrier pigeons during World War One, in which they would be able to send messages away when obviously the soldiers are not able to do it, or if radio connection gets off. I get it. Like, you know, pigeons have been used for a lot of really helpful things. But yeah, the way that they played it off is it's kiddie stuff. Like you have like this, you know, a bunch of serious things happening before the whole thing happens. The whole pigeon fiasco happens. You have the Yakuza gathering, drinking, and, you know, you have a lot of fighting and violence and people getting killed. And then you have a serious story in which you have like Walter trying to prove himself, and then Lance is firing him, and you're supposed to feel like really sad because everybody thinks of him as a weirdo. And then the moment that he gets turned into a pigeon, we have like a lot of pigeon jokes about, like, you know, I have like 360 degree vision, I can see you and my butt at the same time, or eating food from the floor, or interacting with a whole bunch of other pigeons, making him his flock, and they're just eating a whole bunch of random garbage, and they're just hanging around him and won't leave and stuff like that.
Yeah, like he's a really crap spy. I'm really sorry. Like, you know, look how he ended up in the pigeon in the first place. Like, you know, he just drank, like, you know, some, you know, a glass of whatever he could have been, and he didn't even really think about like what he was drinking at the time. Like, you know, he really is bad at his job.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
he's not a spy. He's effectively like he's a Green Beret, if anything.
Mm.
You know, it's just, it's like he goes in and, you know, blows a lot of things up, and, you know, then gets the hell out of there. Like, if anything, like, you know, he's really careless when you really think about it. He should not even been a spy in the first place. Maybe this should have been like, you know, a movie about special forces soldiers or something like that. Maybe this would have been like about the army, maybe.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, so the whole idea of Lance Sterling character for me, like, you know, the so quote unquote world's most awesome spy, nah, it doesn't work with me. It really doesn't. And the whole pigeon thing, yeah, I will admit, is very gimmicky.
Yeah, you just could have like removed the whole thing. I mean, maybe you could have had like a device that, you know, turns him into a different animals, but then it's glitching and he has to be able to figure out to fix it. Like, that would have been really interesting. Like, him turning into a pigeon, him turning into a rat, him turning into, you know, a fly on the wall or something like that. Now, I understand where they're trying to go with this gimmick, because it was based off of a 6-minute short that was called Pigeon Impossible, created by Lucas Marcel. And the people behind Blue Sky saw the short, they really liked it, and they decided to convert it into a full-length film. So I get the whole pigeon part, but there's such thing as creative liberties, you know?
Yeah, like, well, the whole idea of, like, taking that and putting it into a big film. There's a reason why things are short films. Keep this in mind. So, like,
I understand, like, short films being converted into like pilots for TV shows. Like, that makes that makes sense, because you know, that's how a lot of cartoons are picked up nowadays. If you see something on the internet created by, you know, one person who has a passion for this idea, and if you like it, then I can see where, you know, the idea of that comes in. But I don't really hear a lot of stories about shorts being converted into like full length films.
Yeah, but I mean, this to me was just a bad idea, in my opinion. Like, you know, the whole execution of it basically is just very stock, and the characters you just can't get invested in, and everybody in the music, as far as I'm concerned, the only good thing I could probably say is that Blue Sky were really, you know, nailing the animation
Oh, yeah.
towards the very end. That's the only good thing I could basically say.
Yeah, I would say for their last official film, the animation looks great. Like the you can definitely tell that they were really nailing the atmosphere with the lights and the shadows and all of the details that you would see in a lot of spy movies. And then of course, like the different locations, like you can feel that you're in a Mexican resort, you can feel that you're in Venice, you can feel that you're in the North Sea, you can feel that you're in Washington DC or Alexandria, Virginia. So yeah, it captures the atmospheres really well, and they're able to play off with the colors and stuff like that. I mean, that's what we've been praising Blue Sky for, is that they're able to nail down the animation, and they've gotten better and better as time went on, where we started off with Blue Sky's first attempt, which was Ice Age, and it was not very good. I mean, it was kind of dated by even at that time. But they continue to get better. And unfortunately, the only thing that they didn't really get better at is storytelling and characters, which is something that they really needed to work on, especially since in, you know, 2019, there was, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, this was, you know, a time in which there were a lot of great animated films. And, you know, unfortunately, Spies in Disguise, I mean, this is something that we've seen in throughout this retrospective, is that, you know, Spies in Disguise, they've pretty much just got overshadowed by a bunch of other animated films that performed, well, let's just say a lot better. We've talked about in this retrospective that they were either in like, you know, the top three or the top 10 of the best animated films. And look what they were playing at. They were Toy Story 4 came out in 2019. And I know a lot of people complained about it, saying like, oh, it was a completely unnecessary story and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, Aaron and I, we enjoyed it pretty well. And it was able to give us, you know, characters like Forky and Duke Kaboom. And it was able to bring back Bo Peep. And it was able to kind of like, in a way, ended off the story of Woody and Bo Peep together as lost toys. So it was able to do something with it. And then there was How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, which is also a really great way to close off the How to Train Your Dragon trilogy. And Frozen 2, Aaron and I talked about this in casual chats when the movie first came out, that while we probably didn't enjoy it as much as the first movie, but it was able to play off the continuation of where the characters left off. And I mean, there were some other movies that, you know, were happening in between, but this is the first time in this retrospective that we're saying that not even a Blue Sky Studios movie was able to make it into the top 10. It wasn't even close. Abominable, which was that DreamWorks movie that we talked about, and we just said it was just, you know, okay, with a mixture of like questionable decisions on trying to, you know, make Shanghai just this amazing place when we know that there's a lot of things going behind the scenes, made better money than that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, like, besides anything else, really, I think there's not really much else really to cover. I mean, like, unfortunately, what we have here is a very generic spy movie that basically just has a comedic aspect on it. There's really not much else to say.
Yeah. I mean, I will admit that it's probably better than some of the other Blue Sky movies that we have seen, but
not by much.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're ready to rate this, I think. So,
all right, let's do it. Okay.
Right, so unfortunately, you know, I would love to have had Blue Sky, like, have, you know, a massive swan song. I guess we'll have to say Nimona is probably their somewhat swan song, even though it was, you know, finally finished by a different company. But unfortunately, if we have to call this, like, the official swan song of Blue Sky Studios, it's not a great swan song, unfortunately. It's a pigeon song. Effectively, it's so, you know, the music is really doesn't make all that much sense. The character designs, I mean, are pretty much what you would expect from Blue Sky, I guess, at this point. The animation is getting better admittedly, but unfortunately it's a very generic spy story. It's got just the comedic elements in it. The characters also, you know, are kind of borrowed from other movies. There's also elements within the movie that also feel like they're borrowed from other movies. So, you know, I would have to say, as a final total, I'm sad to say, 5.5.
I'm going to give it 6, because I feel that there are some good things in this movie, that they are trying so hard to be able to make you care about the characters and the story. But again, it's stuff that we've already seen before, not only with spy movies, not only with action movies, not only with animated movies, but stories that you probably have heard in anything, video games, books, anything. You would think that maybe they would be able to transform it into something completely different while at the same time using familiar elements, but No, not really. So, yeah, six.
And well, we would say that this is finally our end to the journey to the blue sky, but it isn't. We are now going to go through what basically is tradition here in Old School Lane, our top five best and top five worst Blue Sky Studios movies. So we are going to allow you, the fans, to decide, you know, what you think is the top five best and top five worst, and also we'll give you our thoughts on it too.
Yeah,
So
and we're
yeah.
going to give you 2 weeks on this because we will be taking a look at the other nuggets of Blue Sky that were left over. We have Scrat Tales, which is a mini series, which won't take as long as, say, Dug Days because it was only like four episodes and they only lasted for about like maybe 4 minutes. And then we have, unfortunately, the first attempt of Disney trying to adapt something from Blue Sky, which is The Adventures of Buck Wild. So as soon as we're done with those, then we'll give you our top five best and our top five worst.
Until then, take care, everybody, and bye-bye for now.
See you later.